This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Best Night Ever. This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and I've got a question for you. How much thought have you given to your supplements lately? Or how about your daily routine? Do you have one? How about your energy levels? How are they these days? How about your gratitude practice or stress mitigation or even building a community? These and many more are some of the topics that we touch on in my conversation with the wildly popular podcast guest, Sean Wells. Sean's become a friend of mine and very, very popular guy in the world. Like if you look up any podcast related to health, wellness, optimization, biohacking, he's on there, and you're really going to enjoy what he has to say on this episode. Sean is a product formulator and expert in the fields of performance nutrition, longevity, fitness, and supplementation. He earned his master's degree from UNC Chapel Hill, where he studied nutritional biochemistry with a minor in exercise science. Sean is a registered dietitian with a decade of experience as a chief clinical director in hospitals and skilled nursing facilities. He's also a certified sports nutritionist and has worked with celebrity clients and professional athletes. You're going to love this one. He is also known as the, quote, ingredientologist and has coined the term biohacktivism, which we will talk about in this show. And speaking of the show, we are going to talk about his journey and challenges with his weight and body image, the evolution of his career and how he overcame multiple setbacks, what his definition of biohacking is, which is kind of the hot word these days. We discuss his new book, The Energy Formula, which comes out on April 1st at energyformula.com. We're going to talk about the role of mindset in personal transformation and development. We're also going to talk about finding your tribe or community, his top supplements, and probably you haven't heard of these. We're going to touch on plant medicine and its growing popularity and so much more. Stay tuned. But before we begin, this show is brought to you by me. And if you're interested in taking your sleep to the next level or are dealing with some snoring or sleep apnea, either from yourself or a loved one, you can reach out to me at my new website. It's called viasleep.com. It's viasleep.com. That's where I've been doing a lot of telemedicine appointments, one-on-one coaching, counseling, sleep optimization, and helping people all over the country. That's viasleep.com. You can also find me on my Instagram account at SleepBiohacker, and as well as on Clubhouse, which we mentioned in the show. That's the new app that's out there. I'm at SleepBiohacker there as well. Reach out to me at either of those platforms, shoot me an email or DM, and I'd be happy to chat with you and learn more about what's going on with you and how we can work together to get your sleep awesome. And without further ado, on to the show. All right, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jay. Good to be here.
Super excited. I know we've been probably trying to plan this for a while. Both of us are busy with a lot of things going on, but we were able to get this done. So yeah, let's jump into it. But I guess before we get into a lot of the good stuff, I want to start with your background. I mean, you're known as a formulation expert, formulating hundreds of products and patents and things like that. And now you have a book, which we'll get into as well. But what is a formulation expert, and what led you to go down that road? Because it seems a little bit different than the usual stuff.
Yeah, I formulate supplements, the stuff that you might find on the shelf at GNC and Vitamin Shop. And when you're buying those supplements on Amazon, I formulate for a lot of different companies. I worked with Dymatize and BioTrust, some companies directly, like in my career. And then I went off and did my own thing, which I'm doing now. And I've actually moved further away from actually formulating supplements. I still do some, but I've been patenting novel ingredients more of late. things like T-Crine and Dynamine, which are very popular on the market. They're in hundreds of products, like ready to drinks and fat burners and pre-workouts and all that kind of stuff, like energy drinks. So those are super popular. There's like 20 plus studies on those, and they're kind of in that caffeine energy type realm. And I have other ingredients like exogenous ketones I've patented, and dihydroberberine, which I've talked about. We can get into all those. But what led me to become a formulator is an interesting path. It started like I had a pretty chaotic childhood and was bullied a lot at school and kind of grew up like a junk food junkie, overweight, morbidly obese, actually laughed at, picked on. And I became very good at like making fun of myself and having the humor and being the comedian in my class as a way to deflect all that. But I really grew up with pretty severe depression. And it was in college. I went to business school at Babson, which is a business specialty school. And I didn't know what I was going to do. So everyone told me, just go do business. And at Babson, I started working out, you know, using creatine and protein and, you know, hitting the weights and seeing the benefits. And my body started changing a bit. And people were asking me what's going on and you know, asking for my advice. And I was reading Iron Man and Muscular Development and all these magazines with the giant ripped guys and believing all the hype. And, you know, some of it was working, probably some of it wasn't. But I was reading some other books too, like Optimum Sports Nutrition, this book by Dr. Michael Colgan. This is about 25 years ago. And I went to my doctor in between my sophomore and junior year. I was supposed to get my physical, and I was telling him about all this cool stuff and what I was seeing and how my body was changing. And he drew out this lifeline for me between 20 and 80 and turned to me and said, "Why not be happy between here and here?" And that was profound for me. That gave me permission to go pursue this life path of being a formulator, which I barely knew was even a job at that point. There was one guy in some of the magazines that wore a lab coat, and I ended up meeting him, Dr. Marv Hoyer, and he was a formulator for Muscle Tech. And like, so I was like, this is a thing, I can do this. And after that doctor that I was seeing essentially gave me license to go chase my dream, which, you know, I wouldn't have listened to practically anyone else if they told me that. I would be like, you know, that's garbage advice. Like, go chase your dreams. That sounds silly. But coming from him, it meant everything. And in that timing, when I was just so excited about it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go do this. And I ended up finishing up school at Babson and doing very well there. And then the idea was I needed about 2 years of prereqs to get into my dream school, Chapel Hill, to do nutritional biochemistry, to eventually become not only a dietitian, but this formulator. And I ended up going to UNC Greensboro and talking to the guidance counselor there. And he laughed at me. He told me 26 credit hours a semester of pure sciences. You're a business student, you'll fail and you'll fail miserably. And also you're not in that good of shape. And I left there and almost committed suicide because I believed for 2 years that this dream was possible and it was my life's focus and I now had purpose. And I almost killed myself with like pills and alcohol that night. And so, I mean, that's like a, you know, the polarity of that, like two different people telling me things that, I mean, that's the power of words that's always stuck with me. And obviously I didn't kill myself. That strengthened my resolve after I, you know, was really contemplating going in deep and never coming back. I ended up saying, screw that guy. Like, I'm just going to do this thing. And for 2 years, all I thought about was that guy every day. Every single day, people would say, you want to go out and party? You want to go out to a restaurant? You want to go out to a club? You want to do this, do that? I was like, no, man, like I got my purpose. Like, I'm going to prove this guy wrong. I was like hateful about it every day for 2 years. So in a way, I should thank that guy as well. But, you know, I almost lost my life because of it too. So it really has taught me the power of my own words to other people and how I can be impacting them when I don't even realize it. Like that, the doctor didn't even know that he radically changed my life path that day. And it wasn't even his job to do that. And this other guy, I could have taken my life. And, you know, I ended up going to Chapel Hill and pursuing this dream of mine and ended up getting very, very sick because I was working about 80 hours a week between a full-time job at a GNC and working on campus and getting through my master's. And I got Epstein-Barr virus, Hashimoto's, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. And at the time, I was also dealing with anorexia. I went from being morbidly obese to being anorexic. There's points in my life where I was orthorexic, where I was working out 4 hours a day and all that kind of stuff. So I've had body dysmorphia. I've had eating disorders. I've been through it. And then all these autoimmune issues. And 8 years ago, you know, I had a brain tumor as well from, again, like when I got a job with Dymatize and they were pushing for sale and I was working 80 plus hours a week every day under high stress. And so, by the way, it was keto that dug me out of when I had the autoimmune issues at Chapel Hill and again, nearly killed myself because I was in bed for 6 months in pain, inflamed, thinking that this dream again was over and being taken from me. And I ended up falling into keto and you know, reading about it on some message boards, and it got me out of bed, got me back to class, and I finished up my degree at Chapel Hill. I've had a time with health issues and also self-loathing and drive for achievement and wanting to level up and push harder and, you know, be the best, because I've felt like that's been ingrained in me my whole life, is just not a whole lot of self-love. And it's only been recently with plant medicine work that, you know, and working with therapists and mentors that I've really been able to turn a corner there, where it's not just biohacking to survive, but optimizing on top of a solid foundation of self-love and how to give love and receive love and really being proud of myself and being in a much different place.
Wow, you threw a lot out there. And it's, you know, we've chatted offline before a lot. And I think you and I are on similar journeys, being the same age, same kind of, I wouldn't say I had the same background as you, but, you know, I've always been pushed in academics and, you know, gunning and top of the class and always acing everything, and failure is not an option, and a lot of self-doubt and a lot of internal struggles as well. And I would say, looking back, I'm probably thankful for most of them because they have repositioned me in the journey as well. And I think for most people, you got to have some type of low point or some type of trauma or some kind of life event to really take a step back and regain perspective and awareness. So we're going to go down lots of these roads here, but we'll get to that stuff. And just like you and I, and you threw the term out, biohacking, we're both, you know, health and wellness advocates, enthusiasts. Let's talk about this term, biohacking. What does that mean to you? Because I'm sure we'll talk about that in the rest of this episode as well. It's kind of a hot word these days. People are always throwing that out. How do you define it, or what does it mean to you?
It's honestly a triggering word for me. And I didn't even know for a while that it was, but you know, you hear like older people tend to say hacking, like what is, like that sounds like it's bad, like, you know, hackers are, you know, doing evil things and all, yeah, this
like viruses and computers,
right? Right. But I've thought about the word more as I've done plant medicine work, and that the idea, there's two kind of modes that I've always been in, like one, the slow grind, sacrificing for like something so far down the road that I'll never get to. I want to keep leveling up, and I keep leveling up, but it's the next level and the next level and the next level, and you get caught in that trap. But on the other side of this is wanting to cut things out because I'm broken, hating myself. How can I fix this as quickly as possible? I will do anything. I will use lights. I will use cold. I will use hot. I will use this elixir, this injection, this mushroom, this supplement. I will spend 45 minutes doing intense training, you know, whatever it is, I'm trying to fix it and get rid of it and cut it out. And to me, that's kind of the idea. And that's like a very entrepreneurial, what they call, like, it's this wounded puma energy that, like, most of us entrepreneurs, that masculine energy of, that's a hurt masculine energy. And we're trying to compensate for so much pain. And obviously we can accomplish a lot through that. And I'm proud of all the accomplishments I've achieved. But now I'm at a different place where it's like, okay, what now? I need to be healthier. I need to take care of myself. I need to have self-love. I need to give love to others. I need to just be proud of myself, take a break, relax. So the biohacking thing triggers me a little bit for some of my desire to attack myself and not be my own best advocate. A word can mean anything. You can attach any meaning to it. Obviously, I'm bringing my projection to that to some degree. Now, on Clubhouse, I'm at biohacking.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you know, it's a word that means something. And so I use it. But now I'm trying to approach things more from that optimization standpoint of, you know, I need that mental health and well-being as a solid foundation. And then I can optimize further. I'm not trying to hack myself anymore. I did come up with a term, though, in the book. Biohacking is kind of a mashup term between hacking your biology, trying to elicit, you know, greater performance. But there's also another mashup term called hacktivism, where you hack for social good. Like, you know, think of Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, Anonymous, et cetera. And so I came up with this term, biohacktivism, like where you're not just the N of one, where you're not just self-quantification and, you know, you're just looking for greater performance of yourself. But this is about how can I thrive at my highest level so I can have a greater impact on the world around me. And that was the idea that I had that felt a lot better to me, this idea of biohacktivism.
Yeah, and I think that ties into the whole community aspect that you talk about in the book as well, too. So we'll get to that. And that's a great definition. I always tell people, you know, this biohacking thing is fun and great, but it starts with an awareness. First of all, it's just, you know, why do you want to do this kind of stuff to yourself? And what's appealing about it to you? And what's your motive behind it? I mean, you know, if you just want to be cool and put pictures on Instagram of you taking random supplements and different lights and things like that, that's fun and all that. But there's got to be a bigger picture to it. And I think you nailed it on that with the whole kind of a larger view or larger aspect. It's interesting though, too. I'll tell you a quick story. I bought my kids a trampoline about a month and a half ago and we were assembling it. And I was all being cool dad. I started jumping up and down on it, landed on my butt, threw my back out. The level was like a 9 out of 10. Like I was on the bed for 2 days. I couldn't even move. So I started doing all a bunch of biohacking, you know, PEMF and red light and all these different things, ozone saunas, you know, infrared saunas, ice plunges. Then I go to the chiropractor and I'm excited. I'm like, hey, I'm trying to take control of my back here. I've done X, Y, and Z, all these things here. And the guy was completely like, he's just like, okay, lay down, let me adjust your back. And I was like, okay, we're just not on the same page here. So it is about finding that group or mindset of people that can relate with, which is, that's to me, the more fun part is just kind of sharing and growing with people who are like-minded versus just, you know, playing these N equal one experiments.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right, let's get to another fun topic here. You've got a new book out. It's called The Energy Formula, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's
comes out April 1st.
It's not an April Fool's thing, is it?
No, man. You'd be a fool to not buy it.
There you go. Can you tell everyone a little bit about it? And maybe we can break it down a little bit.
For sure. So it is a quote unquote biohacking book, if you will, or optimization book.
I said that word's going to pop up a lot.
So yeah, it's called The Energy Formula. That's an acronym for experiment, like as in biohacks, as in epigenetics and blood work, et cetera, and bioindividuality. Nutrition, think of keto, paleo, carnivore, vegan, Mediterranean. Exercise, go through high intensity interval training, blood flow restriction, intraset stretching, all these exercise hacks. Routines, so looking at circadian rhythm, morning routine, nighttime routine, et cetera. Then growth, as in growth mindset, like stoicism, get into fasting and then nootropics. And then lastly is your tribe, the community aspect that we were just talking about that's so critical that, you know, I think was laughed at a few years ago, but now that we've gone through COVID, no one's laughing about isolation and loneliness and how important tribe is. And now everyone's looking at that blue zone data a lot differently. So that is the book. It's laid out in that format and it's how to put that all together. There's formulators corners in every chapter that goes through the brands, the doses, the forms of all the supplements. There's resource hacks that goes through devices and techniques and different apps to use. There's surveys in there that can, you know, assess your baseline performance and where you've gone to. And the book has over 100 scientific citations, over 60 full color diagrams, and it's 99 cents on pre-sale. So the ebook is very reasonable. There's no reason you shouldn't pick this up for 400 pages. My life's work has gone into it, literally more than 25 years of work as a biochemist, as a dietitian, and a sports nutritionist. And I'm super proud of it. You go to energyformula.com, you not only get that book for 99 cents, but you also get a fasting guide that goes through like your fasting type and different fasts and what you should do and not do. And then there's a hidden chapter on natural movement, kind of that primal paleo movement that we're not doing anymore, the crawling, the moving, the exercise snacks that we're supposed to be doing, the movement throughout the day. So a lot of good stuff. I'm excited for it to be out there and for it to honestly change lives.
I love it. It's funny. I just wrote the word down exercise snacks about 2 minutes ago while you were talking. I was like, I should ask him about that. But we'll get into that one. Maybe we could break down these sections just for a little bit. We can kind of just touch on them and just so people get a feel for what's lurking under the hood in the book.
Yeah.
First one's experiment, you said?
Yeah, exactly. So the key here in this chapter is I think there's a sense of people wanting to have the one size fits all. Here's your stack. Here's the supplement that works. And once you look at your blood work, once you look at epigenetics, hopefully you go to that level and you're looking at those things and really assessing them. It's really great to have a functional medicine doctor. I work with Dr. Daniel Stickler in Austin at Apeiron. He's a peptide expert, and you know, we go through all this data. We do brain mapping as well and all kinds of things. So we have a full picture of who I am and how I'm bio-individual. You know, I'm very different from someone else. Even like when you look at studies, and I've run all kinds of studies on my various ingredients I'm patenting or some formulations, there's always like super responders or hyper responders. There's people that are in the middle, and then there's people that are non-responders. And this is from a group that's 18 to 24-year-old healthy males that work out at college, that are college educated and fairly affluent. So does this apply to a 50-year-old postmenopausal mom? You know, like there's so much like about this data. And like I'm saying, even with this tight group, there's massive differences. And then you take a statistical average and you say it's this. And it's crazy. And then you get people dropping out of the study sometimes because it wasn't working for them, or you know, they're frustrated or whatever. So this data, you have to realize that, you know, any good study ends with, you know, in this given situation, with these certain people, in this scenario, on average, we saw this, but more research needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Anyone who talks about that it's scientific fact or that it's proof or any of those kinds of things, it's marketing, because there's no such thing in science. That's all marketing. So, you know, wrapping your head around in that chapter about being an individual and trying to, if you can't afford the functional medicine doctor, at least, you know, doing one intervention at a time and seeing what it does for you. And then if you like it, you can apply it and then move on, but not doing 10 things at once. So it's just going through all that kind of stuff and showing you that you are an individual and how to approach that. And then that definitely applies to all the other chapters with all the other things that we're discussing. And then in nutrition, like I get into like really a deep dive on keto, but with metabolic flexibility and, you know, and starting there that you don't have to be keto. And sure, the rest of the world isn't necessarily keto and they're healthy. The problem is we're not metabolically flexible here. We have high glycemic, ultra processed, high bliss point engineered foods that make us overeat. We don't exercise like the rest of the world does. We're sedentary. And both going to the gym and those exercise snacks where you move throughout the day. We're not getting resistant starches and high fiber in our diet. We're not eating ketogenic, you know, with high fat and very low carb at times, like maybe some cultures would do during the winter. We're not going a day or 2 days or 3 days without eating. We're certainly not avoiding snacking. And so when you start adding all these things up, that's why we're so metabolically dysfunctional. And that's why keto can be so helpful when we are in a dysfunctional state, when we are insulin resistant, when we do have a high propensity towards obesity, and our society is built the way it is. So that's one of the reasons why, like, yeah, the rest of the world can eat high carb, but they're eating very differently and their lives are very different. So it's one of the ways that I talk about that if you're built like this, like I have been most of my life, then keto can be very helpful. And then you don't have to be keto your whole life. You can do metabolic flexibility. You can do cyclical and targeted. You can eventually move to just paleo or whatever works for you. And then I certainly get into paleo and carnivore and vegan. And that's another thing where people are like, hey, you know, like what's the best thing? Like, you know, plant-based or, you know, I do nose to tail, you know, carnivore. And I think both can be amazing because both are the way we should eat as omnivores. There isn't one way or the other. The key is that you're eating whole food. Like that's what we've been meant to eat for the last million years, not the ultra processed crap. That's the part that's the problem.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been playing this game on my Sleep Biohacker Instagram account on the story feed. I've been taking pictures of ingredients on the back of food and I've been posting it on there. I'm like, can you guys guess what this food item is? And, you know, I've got a pretty scientific background and there's a couple food items I've put on there that even I was having a tough time pronouncing the ingredients. And one of them blew everybody away. I mean, I said, this is in Costco. It's the highest consumer of this is in China. Almost one out of two people have probably had some of this in their life. And the ingredients in there were just bizarre, some of them. And people threw out all these different guesses and you wouldn't believe what it was, but it was actually baby infant formula powder. And if you look at what was in it, I was like, this is being fed to kids, the most, you know, the most susceptible to these toxins. And then they said, oh, these research places have found like arsenic and BPA and all these different things inside of it. And then it said on the label, it said inspired by breast milk. I was like, this is just crazy stuff. So yeah, I get it. And I've been down that path as well too, of eating a bunch of junk food growing up and not knowing anything about it and just kind of moving along. But then as the awareness grew, then I started to really pay attention. Like you said, whole foods is definitely the way to go. I mean, I don't cook with ingredients other than the ingredients. You know, if I'm throwing something into a food that has other things in it, there's something wrong there. And that's going to take a toll on my metabolic function, mitochondrial function, all that stuff you're talking about, metabolic flexibility. And I guess my question to you, so is keto, and you've obviously done a lot of research on keto, is metabolic flexibility the end point of keto, would you say?
No, not necessarily, because that means that like, metabolic flexibility means that you can be dual fuel and tap into either very well, be adapted for either very well. So it's kind of like being a cross trainer, like you're CrossFit and you lack the specificity if you're CrossFit. So there's people that would be better adapted to keto that only eat keto. And of course, there's people that, you know, could do only carbs, but again, low glycemic, healthy, you know, the healthy lifestyle that would be more adapted to that glucogenic lifestyle. Okay. But metabolic flexibility is about being able to kind of move back and forth between each. And that happens a lot when you exercise a fair amount, when you fast a fair amount, when you eat low carb sometimes, when you certainly eat low glycemic. like that's going to be, I think, one of the healthiest ways that you can be super flexible. So that's the idea behind it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's interesting because I will be mostly keto most of the time. And then every now and then I'll have a treat or a snack or something that's just a little bit off of the normal diet. But A, I don't beat myself up for it. And B, it doesn't seem to have an effect on me, whether, you know, physical or psychological or gut-based or whatever. I can move on. And people say, well, you eat all these bad things all the time. I go, no, I eat them, you know, once in a while, and I balance it with all the other stuff, and I'm more resilient as a result.
Yeah, exactly. That reminds me of a post. You
had. The little the hormetic stressors.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you have 20, let's say you have 21 meals a week, I don't know what you eat, but it could be 14 meals a week, whatever it is. And if, let's say it's 14 meals and 13 of those meals are garbage, and then one of those meals you have something healthy, it's not really going to move the needle. And the opposite is true. And you can grant yourself that grace. And that's actually what I do with cyclical ketogenic dieting, is that I have two meals a week, like on a Saturday or whatever, that I have whatever I want. And it can be, you know, apple pie and cheesecake and macaroni and cheese or whatever it is. And then I also do targeted ketogenic dieting, where right before I work out or play something like sand volleyball, I might have some carbs, some sugar of some kind, usually just like a pure, simple source of sugar. So something like, I don't know, gummy bears or Gatorade or, you know, something like that. I use it as a tool. Mm-hmm. So for me, that works really well.
Speaking of volleyball and exercise, next section is E for exercise, right?
I think so. Correct.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I've been around the world of exercise. I'm not a competitive exerciser. I was doing a lot of yoga for the last couple of years, which just recently shut down because of this whole pandemic. Actually, it's almost been a year where I haven't been able to go to my studio, and lost that community, lost that routine. So what are some thoughts on exercise these days, especially with the whole shutdown?
Yeah, that's such a good point, that there is potentially a community aspect to that. And then we're even seeing, like, in these, you know, pro and college sports, like, it's very complicated. But yeah, I get into high intensity interval training, I feel like is so critical. And so many people are doing what's called low intensity, steady state, like slow go cardio. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it just means that you're not accomplishing a whole lot. Are you moving your body and burning calories? Yes. But just like that exercise snacks thing is about kind of like little bursts here and there, this is the same idea. High intensity interval training is way more effective because it is tapping into that threshold of intensity, like 90, 95, 100% of your maximum exertion. And that's where adaptation hormesis takes place, is at that maximal exertion. So if you're training every day at 40, 50, 60%, you're burning calories, you're moving your body, and you're spending an hour that's, you know, a better hour than sitting around on the couch, but it's not going to elicit radical body composition changes, because why would your body do that? It says, I can handle this. We can do this.
It's about getting out of your comfort zone, right?
Exactly. When you're kind of approaching that maximal threshold, that's why you can do something in 5 or 10 minutes that will outperform something like that's an hour or hour and a half at the gym. Literally, you can do this a couple times a week for 5 to 10 minutes, and your changes will be greater than someone spending an hour or an hour and a half, 5 times a week at the gym. I literally mean that. Obviously, there's certain muscle groups and, you know, innervation and, you know, muscle fiber recruitment and some neural training that's going on when you're doing resistance training that more amount of time would help with. But in terms of body composition, that's going to make all the difference, is doing high intensity interval training. And then I have other hacks that I mentioned in the book, things like blood flow restriction, BFR. It's also called KAATSU, where you put a cuff on, you can get like these tourniquet straps, like just on Amazon, that, you know, you might use in emergency medicine or whatever. and you just put them on at what would be about a 7 or 8 out of 10 in tightness, because you just want to cut off the superficial blood flow. You don't want to get down to the arterial blood flow. So, you know, it's going to create that cell swelling that's similar to, like, you know, when you've done drop sets maybe, and or supersets, and your muscles are just swollen and it's hard. You're feeling the burn and you can't do another rep. This is what happens right away with much lower weights, much quicker. So what's cool about blood flow restriction is they've had people do, you know, with rehab, with people that are bedbound, have incredible results of just, you know, cuffing off the legs or cuffing off the arms, and then having much better results than people that didn't, or people that are doing this on a treadmill having much better results than people that didn't, or people that are overtrained being able to go from that 60, 70, 80, 90% of one rep max and going down to 30 or 40% and still getting better results. So it's a really cool hack. And the last one that's really cool is intraset stretching. And that's like, if you can imagine doing curls and, you know, you at the bottom, like in between sets, you flex your triceps as hard as you possibly can. What happens is you end up stretching the bicep as much as it can be lengthened. And when you're flexing out your triceps and the biceps really lengthened, and then you go right back into another set, there's a time under tension that's taken place where you're never giving the bicep true rest. And it ends up causing much greater hypertrophy, muscle growth, and strength. So it's a very cool hack too. And like a lot less time, you can get some really cool things done.
All right. I'm going to order some of those blood flow restriction straps and do some of that intraset stretching. I've seen Ben Greenfield when he's wearing those straps, and that guy is just so shredded and ripped. And that's not my goal. But if I could do little things like you said that just kind of move the needle faster without having to put as much effort in, why not? All right. Let's go on to another one here. It's the next one, and something that's near and dear to my heart. I've been actually reading the book Atomic Habits and trying to build more routines into my daily practice. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, 100%. This definitely aligns with you, but it's circadian rhythm, the sleep-wake cycle, and how critical that is. Dr. Sachin Panda's data talks about the time that you should be eating, that window, that intermittent fasting window, I believe should be during the daylight hours. So like for me, if I'm going to do a 16 and 8, that 8 is going to be from like 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. or so. And I'll be finished eating by the time it's dark, because we're not nocturnal creatures. We're getting artificial light, as you know, and it's messing with our circadian rhythm, and we can get into that. But I get into morning routines and how critical that is. You know, Tim Ferriss talks about there's two things that really successful people had in common that he interviewed with Tools of Titans. And one of which is a dialed in morning routine. The second of which that I get into in the next chapter is that growth mindset of being an experimenter and not viewing things in terms of win or lose, but in terms of win or learn. And knowing that there's always like the next opportunity, that something else is coming, your win is coming, you're that much closer. So, and that's a kind of a resilient mindset. And that's kind of the through line of the whole book is resiliency. But that morning routine, like I get into things like, you know, gratitude, breath work, you know, working through a journal and planning out your day, doing some stretching, listening to podcasts, whatever it is for you, just 10 minutes. We're not giving ourselves 10 minutes. We start our day with, and then it's like you roll out of bed, you're behind, you got to get my coffee. Maybe I can get a donut and, you know, because I need sugar and caffeine. I'm exhausted. I stayed up too late. And my neurons aren't firing that well, as they've shown. I have acute insulin resistance because I didn't get enough sleep. And now I have a propensity towards diabetes and coronary heart disease. I'm not in a thrive mode. I'm in a survive mode. And my cortisol is firing, adrenaline, epinephrine is firing. And this is how I'm starting my day. If I took just 10 minutes and did, you know, maybe did the thing like where the I talk in the book about the chimes that can get a little louder and come in a little tighter, You know, you can get clocks or apps that do that. You can get the lamps that like get a little brighter and brighter and brighter in the room, and you gradually wake up naturally. And then you can do some breath work for a couple minutes and say some affirmations to yourself, because our inner critic is harsh. If anyone talked to us like we talked to us, we wouldn't be their friend. So we need to change that voice and hear positive words coming from us. It's one thing to get positive words from your friends or colleagues, and we love that. But the most powerful words that you can hear are from you, whether harsh or positive. So make them positive and start out your day that way. You know, not only say positive things to yourself, but say what you're going to accomplish today and how today can be amazing, and just manifest that. And then think about all the things you have gratitude for. There's so many things. Yes, there's hard things that happen in your life, and you may be going through something difficult right now, but there's so many amazing things in your life too. You're blessed in so many ways. And so just starting out your day with that 10 minutes and maybe do some stretching and then start into your day. How different is that day with just that 10 minutes that you set aside for yourself, because you're saying, I'm important to me. I'm going to take this time because it's really critical for me, my mental health, my well-being. And when you start your day that way, you feel like you have more control of your day, and the day isn't controlling you. You can own the day by starting your day that way. And that's very critical. That's the morning routine thing. And then, you know, the nighttime, like I get into all the stuff that you're like, you know, a pro at, is like the sleep fortress and the sleep hygiene and, you know, blocking the blue light and avoiding the devices late at night and having colder temperatures and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, the sleep supplements and what makes sense. And, you know, I get into all that kind of stuff too. So I know you'd be a big fan of that. And I even have like a diagram with like all the things around the bed and what the sleep fortress looks like, and, you know, using like the Manta sleep mask and, mm-hmm. and the whole thing, and mouth tape,
yep.
which, you know, if you don't have an oral device or CPAP or any of those things, that, you know, mouth tape can be a good way to become a great nasal breather.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I get into all that stuff. So that's routine.
Okay. Yeah. That covers a lot. I would just throw in a couple things on the morning. Yeah, I'm into the affirmations. I'll generally say, today is going to be a great day. And that's one I've heard for years and years, and I've used it. And regardless of if it's going to be, you know, if it turns out to be a great day, great. Even if it doesn't, it still sets the day up for positive slant or angle. And that's always worked for me. And the other one, in the morning times, when we first wake up, the first 5 minutes of waking up, our brain is still in an alpha predominant state. So that's a window of opportunity to take advantage, because you can grab your phone and just start blasting through emails and texts and notifications and stress yourself out. Or you can take that 5-10 minutes and focus on like the things you said. And one of the other things I do is I'll meditate. And I'm sure that's in there as well. Just instead of thinking about all the great things and all the gratitude, just think about almost nothing. Think about the breath. Think about how lucky you are that you're able to breathe. I could tell you two things. I don't know how much time we can keep going, but last year, as this kind of pandemic started to happen, within I think the second or third month, my dad was in a nursing home and he got sick and he got COVID and he ended up dying about a week later. And I remember the day that he passed away, even that morning, and this was like about a week he was in the hospital. I couldn't see him. I could only FaceTime with him a couple times with the nurse. This was early on and people didn't know what was going on. And even that day when he passed away, I said, today is going to be a great day. Mm-hmm. And you know, regardless of what happened, it was just that much better. And, you know, it's been tough and challenging for a lot of people in the mornings, especially now in these pandemic times. What are we going to do today? What's the news going to spit out? And we have to take a breath. We have to slow down. And the other thing is, speaking of meditation and breathing, when my dad was in the hospital, I mean, he was hooked up to, you know, oxygen at like 40 liters a minute, ventilators. I mean, literally the thing that took him away was his breath. And if you think about how fortunate we are to just even be able to take a breath in and breathe out and have that presence of life, I mean, that's enough right there. I don't need to think about, oh, I'm lucky to have a house or all these other things. It's just really, really fundamental stuff. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. Those routines make a huge difference, especially when you stretch them out over time. They just get built into your daily life, and then you don't think about them, and yet you still benefit from them. So I'm loving it. All right, we got a couple more to go here if you're cool with it. Next one is it growth? Is that right?
Yeah. So growth is multifaceted. And I think this is so important, that growth mindset, the stoicism, the idea of the obstacle is the way.
Yeah, Ryan Holiday. I've actually met him and talked to him at a few conferences. Really cool.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I love that idea that we're not trying to find a shortcut around the obstacle. We don't wish the obstacle wasn't there. That we actually find ourselves, we find our purpose, we start with our why, like Simon Sinek, by going through the obstacle. That difficulty, again, that threshold of difficulty is where we find ourselves, where we have the growth, that idea of hormesis, like that we were talking about before with high intensity interval training. And it's really the through line throughout the book, that idea of resilience. There's something that we have in our body called allostatic load. And it's the size of our stress bucket. And that bucket can get bigger or smaller. Right now, we're probably at the smallest size of our stress bucket in history because we're so distracted, because we're so thermically controlled with temperature from 68 to 72 degrees, because we eat all the time, because we're coddled. And we don't have true adversity, but we feel stressed all the time because of the dopamine roller coaster of social media and TV and Black Lives Matter and COVID and the election and rioting and all that. Like, the news is manipulating us to being addicted and fearful and angry, all this stuff. And we're weak. We're very, very weak. And so we're no longer hard to kill. We no longer have a giant stress bucket. We no longer have considerable allostatic load. And so that's the idea. And really, as the body goes, the mind goes, and vice versa. So when you're more mentally tough, your body is more physically tough, and vice versa. When you do more cold plunges and hot saunas and intermittent fasting, your mind is stronger. And when you do more growth, you know, and journaling and, you know, personal working development, mentors and personal, all that kind of stuff, you're more physically tough. And so that's where we've gotten away from these things. And these things are so critical now. And we're seeing people be so prone to these pathogens being killers because we're not as tough in our immune system. We really should be out there when people are coughing and sneezing and eating food off the floor and hugging each other and rolling around on the ground and all these things, getting our microbiome, getting the pathogens, sending our immune system to the gym. But instead, we're not doing that. We're isolating ourselves. We're in the artificial light, on the artificial floor, breathing the artificial air, watching an artificial life on the screen, eating our artificial food, and we feel isolated and sad and fearful and angry, and we're not touching people and we're not getting outside. And all these things are adding up, and we're becoming weak. And again, like, just even like, think about that thermic thing that I was talking about with the 68 to 72 degrees. Like, we're literally at that temperature all day, every day. We don't want to be uncomfortable. And so we don't have that resilience anymore. And growth is really all about capturing that resilience, where we find ourselves through that obstacle, trekking that obstacle. That's where we learn about our strengths and our weaknesses, and we can improve upon ourselves. People talk about authenticity, but no one knows who they really are because they haven't done the inner work. And again, like, a lot of that soul exploration is, or, you know, the work that you do in plant medicine or with mentors or therapists or whatever, I mean, that is work. You're exploring yourself, and you're, when you feel triggered by something, that's always like, that always means, why is that? Let's explore that, because that's a projection of you. Something triggers you, it annoys you, it's actually to do with you, not that person or that thing. It has everything to do with you. And when you really get into self-development, personal growth, that's when you explore those things and you work through those things and you release those traumas and that history, that baggage, and you let go of it. And so that's a big part of this chapter is looking at those kind of things. And then we also get into fasting, which is important, I feel like, to growth, as I was talking about. And then nootropics, things like MCTs, CBD, you know, different peptides and different things that help with brain function. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great analysis or review of all of those things. I'm a fan of all of that. I think there's a quote from Winston Churchill that says, you know, if you find yourself going through hell, you know, keep going. And basically, it's the same idea. And the whole, I just read this book by Anthony DeMello called Awareness, and it's fascinating. And literally, the whole book is talking about how you project your thoughts out to the world, just like you said. You know, if something happens to you, it's not the other person that's triggering you. You're the one triggering yourself based on your whole subconscious programming. So being able to understand that, quote unquote, doing the inner work, then you're able to start relating better to the outside world and what triggers you and what doesn't. So that's been a high interest of mine lately as well, too. So we're on the same page.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the finale here.
Yeah, your tribe. So like I was saying, it's really important. If you are the product of the five people around you, then who are you putting around you? Are you consciously choosing those people, or are they just randos? Are they just your neighbors, your family, the friends you had since high school? I mean, are they really a positive influence? Are they challenging you? Are they hormesis? That idea of hormesis, by the way, if you look at the bell curve, right, there's an idea of eustress, E-eustress, a good stress, and then an idea of distress, where it becomes too much. And then in the middle, there's the Goldilocks zone, where it's the ideal amount of good stress, and you're not overflowing in your stress bucket, that allostatic load. And you're just getting to the top of your stress bucket, and then you're letting yourself heal, and then that bucket grows. And that's what happens when you have the right people around you too, because you're a product of those people. Those people are criticizing you, hopefully in a good way. In a good way, they're challenging you, but they're also lifting you up. They want to see you do your best. But what's really cool too with mentors is when someone's one step or two steps ahead, it's something you're trying to do, you can model them. You can see it's possible instead of just floundering and staying in the same place. You need someone to see do it. So having those right people around you becomes critical. And then community is just massive. I mean, when you look at all the blue zones, you look at Sardinia, you look at Korea, you know, all these places around the world where people are super centenarians, they live past 100. Almost all of everyone looks at like, oh, what's the diet? You know, like, is it the Mediterranean diet? And sure, that's great. Is it the red wine with the resveratrol? Sure, that's great. But the biggest factor is that one, they slow down, and two, they spend time together. When they eat that food and drink that wine, it's over 3 hours with no cell phones, with food that they prepared while they're talking to each other and enjoying that food. And there's a psychosomatic response to your body when you're eating and it's relaxing, that whenever you have food, it becomes a relaxing event. Whenever we have food and we associate food with weaving in and out of traffic, with vending machines, with work, with stuffing your face while you're watching Game of Thrones, now it becomes a sympathetic nervous system response whenever you have food. With them, whenever they have food, their body relaxes into the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's a very different response that we're in training over time. And community becomes so massive to that. We have seen the number one killer really is loneliness and isolation. That's what leads to sadness, death, and disease. And we see people that have community, that have purpose, that have connection, that have support, thrive. the greatest study of all time, it's now over 8 years of Harvard. They found that they've looked at longevity and what the factors are in that now several generations. And the number one factor was being supported by someone around you. And they showed that it didn't even have to be someone who was loving, which is surprising, but it was like just knowing that someone's got your back was the number one determinant of how long you live, more than cholesterol or money or geographic location or the diet, or it's just being able to rely on somebody and someone having your back, that quality of relationship. That was the number one determinant.
Yeah. And it's interesting because now is when everyone's being shoved into their homes and saying and being told stay away from each other, which surprise, surprise, you know, people are getting sicker. All right. I got a couple kind of more quick round questions here. Sure. Let's say someone's listening to this podcast and saying, man, these guys are talking gibberish. I don't understand all these different words you're throwing out there, but I'm interested in improving myself. Where would someone who's kind of beginning this whole journey of, you know, self-exploration and health and wellness, how would you start or where would you start?
I would start in a very different place than I started. Again, mine was driven out of self-loathing. And I think a lot of people are looking for that quick fix because they think that they're broken. And you're trying to fix something that's broken. Instead of like, think about this with your body fat, right? All my life, I thought body fat was shameful, was gross. I wanted to suck it out, cut it out. I literally had dreams of being able to take a scalpel and cut it off. Body fat is so incredible. It's this dynamic tissue that stores calories so that you can survive in the most dense form possible, 9 calories per gram. And it takes up toxins and it stores fat soluble vitamins and it dynamically reshapes and curves to your body and allows you to be cushioned when you fall. And it communicates with the muscle and the bone. And body fat is actually incredible. Our human body is incredible. And I believe we were born perfect, the way we were meant to be. And it should be about optimizing and connecting and loving ourselves and not about being broken and I need to fix it. So I would be coming from a very different place and then going from there. I feel like all these hacks, these optimizations, the supplements, the diet, the, you know, the sleep, all that stuff is so critical and amazing. But I feel like most people do not take mental health as serious as they should. They think therapy is for people that are crazy. They think having phenomenal friends and treating those friends well and investing in those friends and having those friends invest in you is a waste of time when I have thousands of friends on social media. They think connecting with themselves and having the proper inner voice isn't that important because I'm distracted and I have things to do and I don't want to spend 30 minutes meditating or working on affirmations or journaling. There's a disconnect and I feel like mental health is so critical to your well-being, well beyond all these hacks. So that's where I would start. And if I had the right people around me and the right way to be thinking and feeling and operating in this world, then I would be optimizing and, you know, finding ways to tweak my performance and explore creatively my own unique bioindividuality and not worry about what hacks work for everyone else. But what works for me so that I can be happier, I can love myself now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's interesting because people will react to pain. I think there's two kinds of pain. There's physical pain and mental pain or psychological pain. Physical pain is much more apparent. Obviously, if you broke an arm or a leg or you fell, you're going to hurt. You're going to notice it. You're going to want to try and fix it. The challenge with psychological pain is that a lot of people aren't equipped to recognize it, A, and then B, deal with it. So I agree with you. And that's something that I've dealt with, you know, with therapy sessions, with, you know, I've had some extreme traumas in the last year or so. So it's opening up that chapter, learning more about why I reacted the way I did and how to get better there. And as I've done that, then yeah, all these hacks that we talk about and supplements and routines and technologies, they have, there's a greater appreciation for them. They have a stronger effect, and I'm happier all around, and I can share that with people and build that community. So there is like this snowball effect. But yeah, you got to start kind of from the inside out versus the outside in.
Exactly. I think you summarized that way better than I did.
It's a continual learning process, that's for sure. Okay, so this is something just more on the fun thing here. I want to wrap it up on some more fun things. You're quite the guy when it comes to supplements and vitamins, and people get confused these days. I mean, I've seen, you know, obviously from Centrum and Flintstones all the way to people doing nutrigenomics and taking very targeted, specific metabolomic derived substances. So everybody's different. Where would someone kind of who falls in the middle say, you know what, I should probably start taking some things? What would you recommend just kind of the average person really paying attention to?
Well, my number one supplement that I recommend everyone be on is berberine or dihydroberberine. I patented the dihydroberberine form, and it has nothing to do with like any benefit I might get from it. It's literally because metformin is probably the number one anti-aging drug, and berberine actually outperforms it head to head. And then dihydroberberine lasts longer, is about 5 times more bioavailable, and doesn't have GI distress issues. So it's an optimized form of berberine. It's natural and it smokes metformin. And so glycation and advanced glycation end products is a huge part of aging. And then you see not only a lowering of glycation, of blood glucose, of insulin with dihydroberberine or berberine, but you also see improved lipids, inflammation, sirtuin gene activity, telomere length, et cetera, et cetera. It's activating something called AMPK, and you see more fat loss, and it goes on and on and on. It's really a miracle compound. Along the lines of miracle compounds, I would also mention vitamin D3. Seems simple. Oh, vitamin, like, you know, sunshine. No one gets enough sunshine. No one is typically getting enough sunshine. They say like there's only 4 months out of the year if you're out there for more than 45 minutes a day and you live past Atlanta, that you would be getting enough sunshine. So about 90% of the country, 12 months of the year, is not getting enough sunshine. So you need to take vitamin D3. And it's so much more than just a vitamin that we used to think was for, you know, bone health. It's a hormone, and it's associated with obesity, of insulin resistance, of your immune response. Obviously, you're hearing a lot about it with COVID, of well-being and mood. There's so much that vitamin D does that you really should be taking at least 5,000 IUs a day, and also be taking a vitamin K2 with it. I think that makes a lot of sense. Beyond that, I also think probiotics, prebiotics, and then something now called a postbiotic, which is butyrate, short chain fatty acid in the gut that these probiotics actually make. You also make like with fermenting fiber. And that has a lot to do with gut health. And as your gut goes, so goes your brain, and vice versa, the gut-brain axis. So I think those are really important. Taking something to control or modulate inflammation and provide so many benefits, like polyphenols do, curcumin, taking an optimized form of curcumin. And I love the polyphenols as in general as well. Taking a product, Dave Asprey Bulletproof has a polyphenomenal product that I really like that just has a blend of a ton of polyphenols. And going back to those blue zones, a lot of those blue zones have like these high polyphenol foods and beverages, where like trans resveratrol from red wine, EGCG from green tea, pterostilbene from blueberries, fisetin from strawberries, quercetin from onions and apples. You know, it just goes on and on and on. These compounds are really amazing and associated with anti-aging and are caloric restriction mimetics. So those would be like right off the top, some ones that I would definitely look at for aging well.
That's a great list. You know, I got to add the berberine to my stack. Obviously, I've heard a lot about metformin. I've heard about berberine as well too. That's one I'm going to throw on there. Fish oils. I also do that. Mm-hmm. Do you recommend that?
High DHA fish oil. I like the higher DHA. It has a lot to do with your phospholipids in the brain. DHA can convert to EPA as well. So it's, to me, that's the optimal form to get, is to get a higher ratio of DHA. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm a big fan of fish oil. That's in like my top 12 in the book as well, is fish oil for sure. And then I also mentioned like alpha GPC. Most people don't get enough choline. Choline has a lot to do with the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, but again, is part of the brain health as well with those phospholipids. So getting an optimized form of choline that passes the blood-brain barrier, like alpha GPC, that's always like the foundation of any nootropic stack, because you tend to burn through choline when you're on these stacks and you're more focused or you're more productive. You're using more choline.
I love it. Okay. I guess a couple other topics, man, you've got so much good stuff here. I want to keep going just on a couple more things. You mentioned plant medicine. It's something that's popped up on my radar a lot recently. Some people understand what it is. Some people don't. Maybe you could just give a quick little explanation of what it is, or what your thoughts are on that and how it could help you.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a tendency to think of these things as just drugs, but it's so different than that. Plant medicine means that we were evolved with it over the last several millennia. And it, you know, there's some people that think like that had a lot to do with our evolution, maybe of coming down from the trees and going onto the plains, you know, with our brain development. But certainly if you look back at like these religious epiphanies, these great awakenings, these, you know, incredible ideas and shifts in humanity, a lot of that has to do with these plant medicines and getting outside of your day-to-day minutia or your day-to-day distraction or your ego constructs. Our ego is always protecting us, but in a way that actually holds us back in our growth. Our ego will tell us, you know, don't worry about that, suppress that. And then again, we're wondering why we're triggered by so many things, but we're never exploring that because we're never working through our ego with therapy or just blasting the ego apart like you can with plant medicine. And so some of those plant medicines would be things like psilocybin from mushrooms, MDMA. Some people have had really good experiences with. You can look up the data from MAPS. They're working with PTSD and soldiers in particular. They've had a lot of funding. Psilocybin is getting a lot of funding with PTSD as well. So those two in particular are being looked at for legalization. They've already been decriminalized in some places. And then you're seeing other ones like ayahuasca. You know, that's more of like a going to another place type of journey where you're just blasted off and you really see visions and all kinds of things. And that can be very pivotal. But what's important with all this stuff is that you have intention setting. You go into it with a reason and something you're exploring. You have really good facilitators that are there with you during the journey to make sure you're safe and to ask you the right questions or cue you or get you a blanket or get you the hydration you need while you're on this journey. And again, it's not always like people think it's like hallucinating and being out there on planet, you know, whatever. You can do that with some of these. Like I said, ayahuasca might be a little bit more like that, DMT, Bufo, or a little bit more like that. But, you know, psilocybin is a kind of more gentler place to start. And you don't have to, like, it's literally just removing, or MDMA, it's just removing some of the ego constructs and just being open and more loving and more kind and gentle and being able to explore and be more neuroplastic. So you're upregulating BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and you're rewiring your brain and you're becoming calmer and you're thinking through things and you're saying, I don't need to hold on to that anymore. And that's what's happening in this space. But it's really important, that whole set and setting idea, that you go into it with the right mindset and that you're also in the proper setting that isn't fearful, that isn't, you know, problematic in terms of other people attacking you or you being distracted. It needs to be a calm environment. It needs to be a supportive and loving environment. And then the most important piece is when you come out of the plant medicine, that you have the integration, not only the integration there in that environment, but then in the coming weeks and months of how do you apply what you saw, what you felt, what you learned. But for me, it wasn't until, you know, it was last New Year's for me that I did my first one. And I had such a shift and I felt like I finally realized what love was. I was in a cuddle puddle on the ground. That's what they call it, like laying with people and just feeling like loving and this amazing energy. And I didn't feel that energy of, I need to prove myself. I need to achieve. I need to, then I'll get love and, you know, I'll get the accolades and people will recognize me. And instead I was just being. I was literally just being and breathing, and that felt good. I was happy in my own body, and I was loving the humans next to me, and people were loving me back, and they were enjoying me being there. No one knew who I was when I went to this thing. I didn't say, "Hi, I'm Sean. I'm a biochemist," and, you know, give my full resume, because that's what I used to do, try and prove myself, you know, that I deserve to be in this room. And instead, like, I had a massive shift on what love is and how I can get love and give love and love myself. And people could have told me that, "Oh, this is what you need to do." And I'd be like, "Okay, dude, all right." And I'm going about my day. Until you feel it, until you have that shift in your heart and your brain, that's what takes the change. And again, the ego is like constantly like trying to keep you homeostatic, you know, like it doesn't want you to like make big shifts. So it's always like constructing like stories, and you're rewriting stories, and things are coming from your perspective, and you're like the director of your movie. And a lot of times that's working against you. Now, you can use that ego on your own behalf and like really be delusional and create a great story and tell yourself today's going to be a great day and all the stuff like you're saying. And you can manifest like a much better life by doing that. But typically we're manifesting a much worse life because we're our own inner critic and we're rewriting a very negative story. So there can be like this super positive story and the super negative story, but reality is like somewhere in between, and we're not seeing that typically.
Yeah, those are some great points. And, you know, one of the things I always think about is, whenever I'll speak for myself, but I'm guessing it's pretty applicable. If you have free time, or if you just stop thinking about what you're doing and the thoughts start popping into your head, most of the time they're negative thoughts. And I'm always curious, why does the human psyche always default to the negative? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if you do or what your thoughts are on that, but it's always
survival.
Yeah.
I think it's about survival. It's like, what's the worst case scenario? And you think that through and you're prepared for it, but that's certainly not a way to thrive. It's a way to survive. Yeah. And, you know, when you're in a very challenging environment where your life may be in jeopardy, that can come in handy. Like always thinking through like the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But obviously like when you're comfortable, like we are, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're comfortable and you get a nasty text and it's the same response as if a lion is chasing you down. It's crazy.
100%. Exactly. 100%.
All right. Well, we could keep going on and on, but we'll save some more of this for the next round too. Just to wrap this up, any books or teachings that have recently inspired you? I know you mentioned a couple different things. What are some things that have like just that you really moved the needle recently?
Well, besides the energy formula, the best book in existence, that's clearly the greatest book of all time.
No ego there.
Energyformula.com. But besides that, for me, The Four Agreements was super impactful. Mm-hmm. It may seem kind of woo at first, but it really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And I'm very thankful to that book being written, and it helped me reframe a lot. And again, that's exactly what I'm talking about with resilience, is that reframing mindset. And that's what really successful people are really skilled at, is reframing.
Yeah.
Start with Your Why. I mentioned before Simon Sinek. That's a really amazing book at like understanding your purpose in this world. And I think most people haven't really explored that. I do love Atomic Habits. I do think that's amazing. And I did mention Before the Obstacle is the Way, mm-hmm. by Ryan Holiday. But another one of his books is Ego is the Enemy. And that really gets into some of the things that I'm talking about and why plant medicine can be impactful, and certainly having therapists and mentors and being able to reframe and reconstruct that ego. Otherwise, it can work against you.
Those are some great books for people out there who haven't checked those out. I'd recommend those as well too. And I know you mentioned it, but if people want to learn more about this book of yours that is just epic with information, where do they go or how can they get it?
Yeah, energyformula.com. I mean, obviously you can go to amazon.com, but energyformula.com, you get the extras, the fasting guide and the hidden chapter. And then I have like a two Q&As coming up that I'll do live with people that do sign up. But yeah, it's only 99 cents for the ebook and you get all that. And then in post sale, it'll be 10 bucks. But for now, it's 99 cents. And the hardcover is $39.99, but it cost me $39.80 to make it. Like I said, it's just full color everything, hardbound. Like I went to the best pages. It's literally full color front to back. So I kind of went all out. And then I'm doing an Audible that'll be out maybe in June. But you know, a lot of good stuff so that you can get that. You can follow me at Sean Wells on Instagram. I'm also on YouTube and Facebook.
And we're on Clubhouse as well, too, now.
We're on Clubhouse at Biohacking. Check me out there. Clubhouse is really fun. I definitely encourage anyone listening to go there and listen to me and Jay. I think we're in a lot of rooms together with Faraz and some really good people. So we seem to pop up in a lot of the same rooms.
Yeah, every time I look at my phone, it says, you know, at Biohacking is in a chat room. So I got to jump on. Whenever you're in a room, I got to get in there as well.
Nice. I feel the same way. Thanks,
excellent, man. Excellent. So, all right. This has been a blast. I hope people listening have been inspired to just dig a little bit deeper into their day-to-day and into their well-being. Check out his book as well here. And we'll chat again soon. Thanks, Sean.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jay.
All right, folks, we made it to the end and another epic show that I'm so grateful to be able to record. So what did you think about what Sean had to say? What are your thoughts? He dropped so many nuggets of information and action items. I'm really curious to see what you think and what you would implement into your daily routines. I gotta say that I really do appreciate all of your support over all of these episodes. I think we're over 60 now. And if you can support the show, an easy way to do that is by dropping a quick review or share this with a couple friends who you think might benefit from this information. That just helps get the word out and helps me bring more of these awesome guests over to you and we can all learn together. And just like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, if you would like to work with me directly one-on-one to further improve your sleep or that of a loved one, you can reach out to me at my website, viasleep.com. It's viasleep.com. It's my new website and I'm offering training, consultations, and coaching services for sleep, snoring, sleep apnea, sleep optimization. And if you want to geek out on all the biohacking that we've talked about, you can also reach me on my sleepbiohacker.com website. That's where I've got all the tech and supplements and gadgets that we may have mentioned, some of them in the show here. And I've got discount codes for you as well too. So viasleep.com for working with me and sleepbiohacker.com for learning more about all these different options when it comes to health, wellness, and sleep optimization. All right, folks, we made it. That's it for now. Thanks again so much for tuning in, and I hope you do have the best night ever.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.